FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, if you'll take the chorus stop.
Transformers!
Well, all I can say is let's just hopefully this will work because they put me in charge and I don't know what I'm doing. But guess what? It's TFYLP and it's episode 237. And tonight we're going to talk about the great debate of 2017. We're going to debate G1 versus G2. But, well, first of all, with me tonight is Plasticon.
Hey guys, how's it been? I took a hiatus for a while. Sorry.
And Protoman?
Yo. Just making sure everything's good on this end here.
keep me in line because, you know, we never know what's going to happen. We're really trying to make sure this works. I'm sorry, but me and technology just don't get along. So we're really trying. So hopefully this is coming through good. If the audio is not coming through good, let us know. We're monitoring YouTube and Facebook. Don't forget TFYLP on Facebook. You can get us live there and jump in onto the discussion. I want to get this out of the way real quick just because I don't know when my computer's going to crash. So we're sponsored by Captured Prey and by Mega Toy Fan. I'm going to keep this really short. And also don't forget to check our Patreon page and help us getting stuff together, like, you know, learning fundamentals of computer for me. I need that stuff. And so, you know, let us know. You know, help us do that so that we can get a better show for you. And speaking of a better show, I came up with this wonderful idea of the G1 topic versus G2. And that's what our main topic tonight is. But before we start, what I wanted to do is go through a little brief history of the actual Transformers brand, where it came from, and all the way up to just to the G1 and G2. So, Daniel, just to the G1 and G2. You don't have to go, you know, hours upon hours, just up to that. So let us know. What do you got?
Okay, so if we want to go up until – so – this is all going to go off the top of my head. If I forgot something, I apologize, but this is going from the proto brain. So way back in the day, Takara wanted to bring over G.I. Joe, the old 12-inch G.I. Joe series, and they couldn't get the rights from Hasbro. There was all kinds of, like, you know, hairy stuff that was going on. G.I. Joe, Hasbro was having their own problems with bootlegs back in America. That's why G.I. Joe's, the 12 inches, had the scar on the face to differentiate the real ones from fake ones. So long story short, Takara had to make kind of their own line of 12-inch figures, and they did a line called Henshin Robo. And if you look those up, they kind of look like the Million Dollar Man doll. It's like robotic, you know, kind of cyborg thing going on. As time progressed, you know, obviously the 12-inch line wasn't as popular, and they went more towards a smaller line, which is what we know today as Microman, which is a kind of, you know, where everything kind of goes into that. And Micro Man was a line that consists of action figures and you know, play sets and all kinds of stuff based off of real life objects and all kinds of like little almost like micro figures and stuff using magnets. There was it was a very catch-all kind of thing. From the Micro Man line, there was also the Micro Change line, which is what we know that where Soundwave came from, Megatron, what would be Perceptor. Some rumors that, you know, some of the later stuff that we got that was based off of household appliances might have been early stuff of the house of the Micro Change line, although we then learn, you know, like Shockwave, you know, that was something more from Radio Shack and a Korean company called Toyko. A subsector of that would be also part of Takara, and this is before Tommy merged with them, was they also had the Diclon line. And the Diclon line had a subline within that. There's like lines within sublines called the Car Robot line, not related to the 2000 Transformer series of the same name. And the Car Robot line was revolutionary at the time because it used one-by-one scale where of these realistic cars, where up to the point the Micro Change line where Bumblebee came from and Cliff Jumper and stuff like that had more of an SD scale based off of like a Porsche and a Volkswagen. So the Car Robot line of Diclon was really revolutionary, where it was less of a toy for children and more of a collector piece for Japanese adults and stuff, very fragile and based off of popular cars in Japan at the time. That's why, like, you know, even though the Datsun has kind of a cultural impact here in America, there's a reason why Prowl and Blue Streak and everyone are the Datsun Z. It was a very famous, you know, sports car in Japan. Same thing with the Toyota One, which is what Ironhide and Ratchet are based off of. Very, very popular car in Japan. Not so much so here. It did exist, but just not so much so here. A lot of the stuff that was used for the original 84, 85 molds were designs and models that were very popular in Japan. And I mean, if we saw them here, we were just lucky. Same thing, even the classic Optimus Prime truck, which is a Freightliner 4622, I believe it is, or 4623. Again, popular in Japan for truckers. Not so much common here because already we had the long noses that started showing up in the 80s. So, but that's kind of, in a nutshell, what the early days of G1 were in terms of where those molds came from. There is some other few exceptions. There was the Construction Robo subline, which is where the Devastator came from. Early ideas of what would be Scramble City was going to be part of Diclon, never came to be, and now we have what is Metroplex and the Autobot Combiners. But supposedly, it's never been truly confirmed, but it's supposedly there was early stuff of what was Menasor and the Aerial Bots back then. Also, the bad guys for the Diclon stuff were all insect-based, and that's where our original Insecticons came from, which were part of the Woderos. And there was a whole line of other Woderos stuff that we never got under the Transformer emblem, but we did get those original three Insecticons. There was the Dorvac stuff, which is where Roadbuster came from, and Whirl, which were piloted vehicles from an anime called Armor Battle Dorvac or something.
One thing that you just mentioned that made me think about that, you said that they were piloted, and like Whirl and even Roadbuster actually before actually had little miniature drivers. But
yes,
most people don't understand that even the Insecticons had little compartments for drivers. Now,
and the Dinobots.
Explain on that why they had those.
Specifically the Dinobots and the Insecticons, because the wave that they came out at the time for the Diclon line, there was a similarity. And you see it in the design. There's a similarity in how the cockpit design was done with them, with the Dinobots and the Insecticons, where there's this translucent hatch that was used in both factions, if you will. And in commercials, you would actually see Diclon commercials. You would see that they kind of pitted those two against each other, which is funny because ultimately in the end, we kind of always associate the Dinobots with the Constructicons, but that was kind of the original intention. And also when it comes to piloting and a lot of weird stuff that people don't realize, like your original G1 Megatron, if you took all the let's call them the holster bits and the silencer pieces and everything. If you assemble them together, it actually makes a turret that was meant to be kind of a sitting turret for a 3-inch Microman driver, which of any of the Microman lines they're compatible with. Same thing, completely undocumented, and a lot of people don't realize this, Perceptor, the original G1 toy, had treads on his legs, and a lot of people kind of overlook that, but that was actually for a documented... actually, you know what? They kind of talked about it, though, when they did the repaint with Magnificus for eHobby, but right. years ago, they never really touched on it, where it turned into a tank mode, which was supposed to be a Diclone driver's seat, and it worked with a typical 3 1/4 Diclone figure. Years later, like I said, they would do the Magnificus black repaint for eHobby, and they'd play up on that, but... For literally 20 years, they never touched on that at all.
Sure, but they even put a 3 3/4 inch figure with it in the eHobby. Yes,
they did.
Really cool figure, too. Love that one. if you could pick that one up, it's really cool. Comes with multiple hands. But either way, and you know, then we're talking about like other stuff that wasn't Microman, wasn't Diclone, wasn't Dorvac, that just happened to be part of that early 84, 85 stuff. Which is, you got, of course, Macross, or as you know, for the few that don't know what Macross is, Robotech. We got good old Jetfire and right. all the weird stuff of why he doesn't look like he does on the show and why his toy is different and all the drama that we have with Harmony Gold today when we almost got a box set, you know, nixed of the G.I. Joe versus Transformers from SDCC. All of that is because of Robotech and Macross and everything that starts with Jetfire being based off of the VF1S Roy Fokker custom.
Yes, yes.
I mean, right. again, this is all going off the top of my head here.
Well, real quick, we have one of our listeners, Knight yes. Swords. He said, I thought the pre-Dinobots and the pre-Insecticons were the same Diaclone faction.
They were shown in commercials fight. The problem with Diclone is everything that we have based fiction wise is off of pamphlets that were included in with the toys, which were like super limited, and commercials that kind of showed who should clash against who with the Japanese commercials. I wrote the bio for the Bakon exclusive King Wodoros, which is the red Waspinator repaint. And I based all of that off of all my heavy research of what exists of Diclone fiction, which is super limited. And so, I mean, it was always suggested just based on the commercials, because Lord knows there's nothing else, that the dinosaurs were attacking the insects. That's it. That's all we got. And it showed that Grimlock had a sparking gimmick and he spat fire out of his mouth, which was incorrect. So, I mean, there's only so much you can base it on. You actually, if you watch that commercial carefully, you actually see a flint inside Grimlock's mouth or whatever, Kyoryu Robo, which is the T-Rex Robo, right. You know, like he's spitting some kind of fire out of his mouth. But either way, it's really what is fiction with Diclone and Microman. It's based off of what those commercials would tell us. If it was a kid just pretending to listen to a radio when his mom wasn't watching him do his homework, was that radio sentient? Was it just a kid trying to listen to the radio and the baseball game instead of doing his homework? And, you know, then he transforms it into a toy, you know, so his mom doesn't see him doing that. Like that's literally one of the commercials and one of the advertisements for cassette Robo. I think it was Radio Robo.
Was it Blaster?
What would be Blaster? I mean, that's just one of the commercials. So the fiction is so limited with it. And that's primarily the reason why Transformers was such a huge success back in Japan, was because they didn't look at what we did and go, oh, it's just Diclone and Microman, what the hell, like they're just, that's a cheap bootleg. No, because they were so happy to see that we actually did something with it and gave it some character, where up to that point it was very limited. I mean, it's like, imagine if G.I. Joe came out here and they had no character, no bios, and nothing. And then Japan ran with it and then brought it back, and it became a big deal, you know. So it's the same thing. Like, it's just – and not to mention, up to that point, piloted robots were kind of the thing in Japan. It was very rare for a sentient robot to exist. And even today in Japan, they still – they don't like it. They really don't. Like it's – even with Transformers series in Japan, you always have – There's sentient robots, but there's still that kid character that kind of calls the shots in the end, which is like, that's just how their culture is. So it was really different back then. I mean, again, you open up your Optimus Prime chest, that's not for a Matrix. That's for two, you know, Daiklon drivers, you know, right. Like there's everything. Well,
Dan, I want to kind of cut you off a little bit there. A lot of people don't know this. Raiden that they got over there, and we somewhat got bits and pieces throughout the years to be able to actually play with, the train robo version of it actually would hold the 1-inch figures on the inside.
Yes.
But Devastator would not hold any 1-inch figures. I always thought that was the weirdest thing in the world.
Well,
the Devastator itself couldn't hold a figure, but the other one did.
I think the reason why Devastator didn't, and also the funny thing with Devastator was, his scale too compared to the other car robot stuff, because he wasn't that, you know, perfect. I think they were one by 64 scale one by 32 scale, and the Devastator pieces were not. It's the same thing with Devastator and the Triple Changers. They were late Daiklon stuff. So where there was that shift to combiners and triple changers, and that's the thing too, like we actually had, and not talking about Octane, we actually had a third triple changer that ended up never getting released. That was originally planned of the first two. I mean, then we got the Autobots ones. And, I mean, if you look at the Autobot triple changers compared to the Decepticon ones, you clearly see an aesthetic change, a use of lack of die cast instead of plastic and PVC. So, I mean, you already see the aesthetic change with that too, where Japan clearly had different stuff planned. I mean, just look at your 84, 85 and some of your 86 stuff, and you really see just on an aesthetic level, on a material level, how there were so many things that showed this was Daiklon, this was Microman, and this was Hasbro internal, you know? So, I mean, the second you look at Hot Rod and Cup, you start seeing stuff that's vastly different, despite the fact that it's next to an Ultra Magnus in 1986. Which was Powered Convoy, a Japanese Microman release toy,
which is weird because you know, you had Powered Convoy, then you had everybody calls Big Powered, the one that we got was Diatlas, but what they got was completely different. That was called the same thing, and it was basically four robots would combine, and you actually had a powered suit that you'd put a 1-inch figure in to fit into a larger robot that turned into a bigger robot. It was crazy what that thing did.
And again, like the name clashes kind of come from the fact that just, you know, there was a huge gap of time in between that. And they probably just go, oh, people won't remember that. Because again, original Daiklon line was called Car Robots. You know, you fast forward to 2000 in Japan, and that was literally the name of Robots in Disguise in Japan. And it wasn't like they were homaging something or anything. It was just that's what they were going to call it. It was the return to Car Robots after, you know, 3 to 4 years of Beast-based stuff in Japan and America. So with the exception of Machine Wars.
There's only one toy line I could think of, and this kind of goes a little slightly off kilter, that even remotely looked anything like Diaclone, and that was Starcom. Because Starcom had a lot of the same gimmickry. You had the Diatrain, which was a big train that was blue. You press two buttons on the top, it would turn into a jet automatically. It's all geared. Starcom pretty much had the same thing. They had similar gimmicks within them. You'd press a button on the back of the gigantic shuttle, and it would push the cargo bay out so you could put your cargo in and shove it closed. That's something a lot of people realize. Also, the magnets on the feet of the Starcom
magnet,
guys.
All the magnet-based stuff, well. Especially. Yeah.
A lot of the gear driven in, that's where they got their idea.
I wouldn't be surprised if when Starcom was being engineered, we'll get into that, especially when it comes to the G1, G2 topic, because that really talks about where toy companies are kind of aware what each other is doing before stuff gets publicly released a lot of times. And I know with G2, I'll bring it up especially because a lot of G2's opinions and stuff were based off of a certain rival company at the time, but we'll get into that later. But the last thing I just wanted to touch on before we get into what would be G1 would be, you know, there was the oddball stuff from Korea in the case of, you know, where Omega Supreme came from, where I mentioned before Shockwave came from. That was Toyko, a Korean company that, you know, would once in a while license their stuff and you know, release it through Radio Shack and even other companies. Because the funny thing is, Astro Magnum and Galactic Man, which is what is Shockwave. I mean, there was multiple versions of him that were released even under bootlegs way before the Shockwave toy came out in 1985. And he was there was a Armatron, which was a French version that was released, which is a play on the word arme à feu, which means gun in French. There was another version that was like a bootleg, and it had like red pieces instead of pink, and there was a clear version. There was just so many, you know, and to this day, still, like, even with Omega Supreme, there's still once in a while there's different bootlegs of him that sometimes we're not able to pinpoint the year. Did it come out before 85? Did it come out after? I mean, there's the original one that came out first, but then there's bootlegs that I've seen like in weird chrome colors and red and blue. And, you know, a lot of these bootlegs, they don't have stamp dates on them. Did they come out before? Was it a bootleg of that original one? Did it come out after Omega Supreme was the fact? There's so much of that stuff. Then the last one is the Deluxe Insecticons, which came from another line, which again, Takara and what they were doing at the time. And what was cool about that one was there was an unreleased figure that never came out that was planned, which was a Ladybug, which kills me that I'm surprised no third party guys ever got on that, because it would have been kind of the first female robot of that whole line, if anything. And
would have predated the movie.
Oh yeah, totally. Well, I mean, the movie, 100%,
all that.
Alita 1,
yes,
and you know, even if you want to go into Nightbird, if you want to really even touch that one as a transformer, well, not a transforming robot, but it's just like that would have been the first one, and it made it into, again, only way there was fiction was the pamphlets that came with the toys. In the toys, there was a tease at a Ladybug character that transformed, never came to be. Same thing, like, you know, there was teases at what looked like a Metroplex, never came to be, which then years later would be what we have as, you know, Metroplex today. But in its early inceptions of the combining with the combiners and stuff that ended up becoming Transformer product, not Dicon and Microman product.
Well,
and there's so much.
Real quick, once again, Night Sword says that the Deluxe Insecticons were Bandai. Now, I remember that a subsidy company, or the actual Japanese company, the original Jetfires from the mold.
Tokusetsu.
Begins with a T. How do you pronounce it?
Tokusetsu or something. Yeah, like, no, it's not Tokusatsu. That's something else.
It's
but yeah, that's the one that kind of licensed everything, because at the time, Bandai was kind of fractured in the early 80s into three separate companies before they kind of became one. It's kind of like how Takara Tomy is one today, even though back in the 80s, Takara and Tomy worked together in a lot of things, like Pokemon, even though it's a Tomy creation, still got released through Hasbro in America because of Takara's ties and stuff, even though they weren't one back then. It's the same thing where, to give an example, Bandai today owns the rights to Machine Robo, but back then, Bandai was, you know, with the other sister companies, there was a company called Poppy, which did a lot of their diecast stuff back then, and it did Machine Robo. This Toku, whatever, I keep forgetting the pronunciation from it.
It's a really long name, and it's got, and I'm sorry I can't do it. But I will say this much, some of the actual Jetfire, the G1 Jetfires, have a little sticker that says that. So
and on top of that, they also have the Macross logo on some of the wings.
Well, if you get the early releases ones, then they had the Macross, and they actually, and I actually did a big thing on that. That actually, if you get a 100% complete Macross, what I would call Macross Jetfire, every part is actually molded differently. There's more detail. There's actually a mold around the cockpit. There's molding in the thighs, and the actual armor is more of a dark maroon than the brighter red. So
With launching missiles,
And the very early ones actually did have, and those were mostly in Canada, if I remember correctly.
That's I remember having a discussion with someone about this at TFCon, where they claimed, and again, the problem is, it's like I always say, show me a sealed copy. You know what I mean? Because otherwise,
that's the problem.
Because the thing is that VF1 S. Roy Fokker, especially now, is kicking around with so many collectors for someone to just throw it into the foam. Because, you know, the foam that was packaged with it was straight up just the foam from the original Macross toy, and just Hasbro repurposed it with a new box on top of it. But yet it has the spot for the missiles, even though, I mean, I have a Mint in Box one. I don't know if it's a Canadian one. It was complete, never touched, didn't have no missiles. You know what I mean? Like, so clearly it was an American one. Didn't have French on it, mind you.
Well, here's the funny part. And everyone talks, and I went into a discussion with someone else about this. And we figured that it was more of a, it was sent, most of them were sent to Canada. But that there are some, especially if you got some with the mix right at the, when they transitioned it over, it may not have come with the missiles, but it still had the spring in it. And I had this big argument with him, and I'm like, well, you do realize what that spring is. It is literally the same as a Bic pen spring.
Mm.
It's very, very easy to take the screws out, slip one of those in there, and make your own. So I'm kind of with you. Show me one that's sealed that you can document exactly what
I know,
is,
and someone
I'll
someone who would want to crack it open, you know, like cut that yellow tape,
right?
You know, and
it's one of those ones that, you know, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll pot? Well, you know, we may never know. We may not.
And it's just that combined with the fact that there's been a lot of stuff like that too, where people repackage stuff and they'll say like, oh, like, you know, because
blue, blue
I know
streak.
That. Blue streak is probably the most predominant one of that. But I always tell people, because like the biggest argument of blue streak is, you know, because they say, oh, you know, well, it was in the packaging and it was in the instructions. So it must exist. But then I always say to people, pull out your G1 Soundwave instructions and your G1 Soundwave catalog thing. If you look at your G1 Soundwave instructions and look carefully, it's Cassette Man with a blue piece of tape over Cassette Man's name in every shot.
Right.
Because they at the time, they were just using the Daikon and Microman stuff. They were just taking photos of that stuff and slapping stickers or a blue piece of tape. Look, like if you don't have a Soundwave instruction manual, if you at least have the 1984 catalog, which shows all the original, 23 figures – look carefully at Soundwave. Blue piece of tape right across his lower tape deck piece because he's covering it up.
Well,
so I say to you right there, I mean, if you must have had blue streak as a kid, you must have also had blue tape Soundwave.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, and I made this this little argument because one of my first – well, my first Transformer was Cassette Man, which is the knockoff. And it came out the same year the Transformers did.
English.
It's knockoff. And
on the box.
But a lot of the molds were more congruent to the micro change line than they were to the what Hasbro produced. And I tried to make that argument, and they're like, no, it's a knockoff. I'm like, well, it is, because it was Taiwan. It's a different company. It was what's it, Shanti? Is that the name of it?
I have one myself. Yeah. I'd have to
I think it was Shanti, and it's just different molds, but it actually lent more,
the stickers
and everything more to, and with the headphones and everything, more to the pre-Transformer line than the actual Soundwave did.
Yep.
We were talking about, Shockwave, and yes, I remember going to Radio Shack and seeing that. There was another one that was called, something like that.
Yeah, there's another one like that too.
Yeah, and it actually had clear. It wasn't pink. It was actually clear. All the bits were clear.
Yeah.
And then I found out recently, a few years ago, there was one that was made that was called Enforcer that was actually completely remolded in purple, lavender purple, and very, very hard to find. And the actual gun barrel, which anyone knows on a G1 Shockwave, is gray. This is lavender purple, or it's like a deep purple. It's an amazing piece, but believe it or not, it came out about the same time that the G1 did. These are all just different variations. You had North Korea, you had Taiwan. Oh my gosh. Think about all the different areas that were puking these things out. So you do have variations, including, you know, like the Mexican versions and even Canadian
Canada
ones.
Had variants.
Absolutely.
Canada had, I mean, that's where it leads to also the rumor of that Jetfire, because Canada had Red Face Slag.
Yes.
Canada had Blue Face Ultra Magnus and White Face Inner Robot Ultra Magnus. Like, there's tons of variants of that stuff that, like, in Canada, like, Red Face Slag's rare, but in Canada, if you encounter a Slag, 50% of the time it's going to have a Red Face because it was just that common over here. But in the States, it's like, oh my God, Red Face Slag and it's Launcher.
Exactly.
Big money.
And then you also had the transition piece, too, of that one, which was, it didn't have the white legs, but it still had the, it was the arms that were different, weren't they? Weren't the arms red? I'm trying to remember.
I can't see it from here.
I'm pretty sure the arms were red and the face was red and the legs were white.
Legs are white. I know that for sure.
There's a transition piece, which actually has the gray leg or the black legs.
That's okay. That I didn't know.
Yeah. And then there's the launchers were different too. The launchers were red.
Yeah, the launcher. Well, that's sometimes the launcher is worth more than the toy.
Well, sure.
I've seen that a lot where if people could find that red launcher, it's big money. It's worth more than the actual loose figure itself.
But it's like we've said before, you know, you go to Mexico and you look at all the different mini bots and they're common. But you bring them over here and oh my God, you know, you get a blue bumble jumper. That, you know, a Mexican
sedan,
one,
yeah.
And you bring it over here and it's worth buku money. Over there, it's like, you know, show me a yellow one. I want the yellow one. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, different areas have different, what would be easy to find and what would be hard to find.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even know, I'm pretty sure even up until, and we'll get into it, you know, I know G1, maybe even G2, and I'm going to kind of leave this to you guys, but even G2 had their areas where stuff was easier to find and variations and harder to find.
There was, for sure.
So, well, I'll leave that to you guys.
Yeah.
If we're going to talk about major variants, Optimus Prime is probably the biggest variant. Because
he did have some, yes.
You had pre-Rub Prime in G1, right?
Oh, there's a lot more than that.
You had a bloated gun that basically came from the it literally came from the Diaclone line. And then you had metal plates that were still in the trailer.
Mm-hmm. For,
that
for
stuff
what,
was never changed.
For what reason? Most people don't even know what that reason was. What was the reason for those metal plates?
The metal plates in the trailer basically was for its upright repair bay. So that way you can take the little Diaclone guys and put them on there and they can stand horizontally or vertically.
If you ever wondered why those little Diaclone guys had the little magnets... That's why they had little plates. And you talked about Starcom, and I agree with you, but I thought Starcom came afterwards. After the
Starcom did come afterwards. What I'm saying is
Starcom kind of took from Takara.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's what I was saying is Starcom to me went and got hold of some of the old Microman, Diacron, Diaclone, however you guys want to say it, because there's 5,000 different variants. There's even Chronoform.
Yeah.
All those basically took the technology from that and integrated similar type of technology into their toys when they designed them, which is really, really cool to me. I love the idea that they kind of did that. They carried something over that Japan had that we did not have in the States. And there were some toys that got released here that were not under the Transformer license, like a red Sunstreaker. It actually did come with a little guy.
Well, that's when you get more into Diacron, which was stuff that was unlicensed and released here again because of the popularity of Transformers in its early inception year. And also, I almost feel like they knew behind the scenes because how it worked was, and it would probably be the end of this whole discussion where I wanted to say how Transformers came to be, which was the Tokyo Toy Show of 83 when I was just reading an article about him recently too, when him and a whole bunch of other guys from Hasbro went and they saw these Diclone and Microman stuff that were on display. And there's this great piece of footage online, this amazing piece of footage that someone shot with a camera at the Tokyo Toy Show in 1983, which shows like pretty much history itself, what the Hasbro execs saw when they went down there, which were these displays of the Diclone and Microman car robot stuff and Microchain series. And that early stuff a lot of it, I feel, when Hasbro was probably making those early business deals, I wouldn't be surprised if Bandai talked with their people. And at the time, I don't know, let's say Takara, when they still was, you know, like probably in talks with Poppy when they were doing some joint ventures, when they were doing a lot of, because they used to do stuff together with Sentai. I mean, God knows what was leaked. And then, of course, the bootleg guys, they're on the inside too. If there's anything we learned with third party today, is there's all those guys are on the inside working in the same factories, you know? So I wouldn't be surprised that when Hasbro, you know, put the green light for Transformers, that the Diachron bootlegs were already starting to get manufactured and shipped out. I mean, we'll never know the timelines when it comes to bootlegs, because those guys will never come forward like we do with Yokei-san and some of the others from Hasbro and Koji Ono. But, I mean, all we could do is speculate with that.
Right. And I'll even go so far as to say is if anyone has a G1 Sunstreaker, look on the side of it. And what's it say? The little sticker that was put on there. CR.
Car robot.
There you go. They even though they got rid of the actual car robo that was on the, I guess it would be the crotch area or the ab area, they still kept that. I mean, for anyone to say that they didn't come off of the quote-unquote the same assembly line for these things, I mean, that's ridiculous. Of course they did.
Well, a good molded example, too, is if you look at the hood of Braun, it has an M on it,
right,
for Microman.
Yeah.
You know, like, and most people, they just kind of overlook that. But that's another one of it where a lot of the Microman, whatever you want to call them, Q-Transformer SD scale stuff.
So
also kind of had.
So
that
when
stuff.
You had Jetfire, well, when you had Jetfire, who actually had the Macross symbol on the wing, which was first painted, then second as a sticker, then third removed. The only reason they actually went to the task of actually removing it is because that was more of a, they had a problem with Bandai. If you remember, they talked about this. I heard about it. They talked about the molds and how they didn't want them using it, so they got rid of that. And they actually the back of it actually had begins with a T, the name was on the back, and then that got switched over to Bandai, which was licensed through Hasbro. And when they licensed it through Hasbro, and you had the Bandai, all of a sudden this Macross symbol sticker was removed. So it led they wanted to get rid of any reference to their line, which was at the time Robotech through Matchbox.
Matchbox was doing all the Robotech stuff, right, back then.
So there was no discrepancy there. They got rid of that emblem and they changed the copyrights on the back. The only one I could think of would be Omega Supreme Toy Box. Because they had different colored variations of that one also.
There's actually a running change thing dealing with Blaster as well. On the very back.
Yes.
Had a gigantic panel that was glued in.
Right.
When Hasbro got hold of it, basically covering up where all the electronics used to be. And then later on, they remolded it to be a solid piece.
I was just about to bring that one up. I've collect Blasters because he was my first Transformer. And I have all the running changes of them. There's quite a few. And I've had to open them up too, some of them, because they have interesting, like this is the one here with the battery pack cover. And then some of them don't have the battery pack cover. And then some of them have almost the opening spring for the opening thing working perfectly. They're kind of hit or miss with the closed door type and open door type. But yeah, he was varianted to hell, that one especially.
Yeah. And even in color variants as well. And
yes.
Thing had color variants left and right. Just like Soundwave did. Soundwave had color variant too. So there were changes in those. Even like, you know, getting rid of like the headset thing that came with Soundwave for Cassette Man.
Go so far as to say even taking the neutering of the Megatron because of safety standards.
Oh yeah.
Intermittent trigger and full spring where if you had a little bullet, it would go in there and it would fire. So, yeah. I mean, all those things. And I think that had a lot to do with the with what people were talking about with the launching gun for Jetfire, too.
Okay,
well, I got a question.
And there was actually
the
other
Browning.
Ones. Well,
yes.
Browning. How many variances were there in Browning?
Three, to my knowledge.
Three, right?
If you can, are you talking like also including the Master Force one, or just talking the micro chain stuff?
The
if there's just the micro chain stuff, it would just be the two, to my knowledge, just the black and brown, and then the original gray and red, well, silver and red, and then obviously when it was turned into Master Force, you have the blue one. So I assume it's just the three. I have the two. I have the red one, the original Micro Man, and I have the Japanese Master Force one, the blue one, but I don't have the black one, but I know that that one does exist. So.
Well, that's
yeah, it does.
You're talking about Browning. We'll just leave it at that because those were the ones that were mass released, but then there was also a Lucky Draw, was there not?
Oh, that I don't know. That I don't know.
That I don't know about.
I thought
there was a lot of like, you know, it's funny
because
I was doing research recently on MicroMasters, and I mean, someone made a claim on that there was a all white Lucky Draw repaint of Countdown, and I've yet to see an example of this or a photo or anything, but it claims it exists. You know,
well,
so
I know when they re-engineered Browning, if you remember what I'm talking about, and this was just a few years ago, and they came out in red and blue. And they had what they called a prototype color, which was all in like the milky white colored, which I actually got. But I mean, we don't count those because those came afterwards. But they do exist. So I'm kind of wondering if maybe someone might be confused with that.
I don't know.
You know,
there's a possibility because you look on eBay all the time and you see all different kind of variants of this thing. And then you got like sometimes you'll find like the guns are silver and sometimes the guns are yellow.
Well, the yellow ones were with the Kingdam.
Yeah, those are the bootleg ones. I have pieces of that.
Yeah, that one's fairly easy to find.
Yeah.
And then the fists also on the backside, and I don't know how else to say it except they had an X as opposed to being a solid peg for it to plug into. It had a little X, and that's what plugged into the back. But they, all of them. All right. So, we talked about, this is the second part. First part, we talked about the inception and everything of Transformers. So, what everyone is waiting for is this big debate. And that's what we're going to talk about. It's the debate of which is better, G1, G2. Now, I had this topic in my pocket for a while, and I've been wanting to get the two of you together specifically for this. And although everyone thinks they know what I'm going to say, here's what I want to do. I don't care who goes first, but Plasticon, you are going to debate as to why G1 is better. And Daniel, you're going to debate on why G2 is better.
Okay.
Guys, think you can handle that?
Yeah. It shouldn't be too hard.
All right. Who wants to go first? Who wants to hit it right up? Actually, since it's G1, Jason, since you are debating for G1, go for it. Mm-hmm. You're up first.
Okay, let's see here. Let's go to, if we're going to talk about this direction, all I have to say is G1 actually had more molds than G2. Original molds.
Of course. Also had more years.
That's true. But there were a lot of unique molds that G1 had that G2 never did get.
Yeah.
Star Saber and Victory Leo was a big one that most people, it never ended up in the States, nor did it end up on G2's shelves. Power Master gimmicks didn't ever go over there, nor did the Headmasters. I don't think there were any G2 stuff like that.
No.
I would say, you know, when it comes to the reuse of the original molds, build quality, I think they were little more in, like I would say, like Prime's trailer, the plastic quality is not as rigid, would be the right word to say.
Compared to the G2?
Mm-hmm.
The argument I would give is, in all honesty, I think that after going through the, I guess let's call it play testing of 2 years of G1, I found that the G2 toys were more or less, when they were using pre-existing molds, with the exception of, let's say, Devastator, G2 Optimus Prime's trailer, the black one, I think it's a lot stronger, less broken tabs on those doors, let's say, where the original G1, a little more fragile based in its old Diclone Microman roots of it being more of an older collector toy than it is a toy meant for children. But that's just my take on that.
What about like mold degradation? Could you tell her?
Well, G2, I will say is guilty of that. That was the first sign of, at least in America, I know Japan had Black Zarek, but it was the first sign of GPS, more or less. Mm-hmm. Started with G2 with Slingshot and Electro from the laser rods. So G2 is the pioneer of that, if you don't count Black Zarek. And there was also
G1's or 1.5, as some people like to call it.
I do.
Just to mention Skyhammer, yeah,
like this guy. Skyhammer. You had all your GPS was actually a pretender issue, a G1 issue before there became a Generation 2 issue.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true. Now think about it more, looking at some of them, mm-hmm. but. It's true. And then you have the monster pretenders with
Slog.
Yeah, with Slog. Yeah,
Slog would come to the break.
So I take it back. Actually, G2 had nothing to do with the.
Oh, Ritzelback.
But it's good. Hey, that works in my favor.
It does, but I mean, I
was going to bury it originally, but then I'm like, actually, not now. I think about it. No, G2 is still good for that.
Yeah, Skyhammer. In my opinion, I think.
I know. I'm looking at the.
I'm not trying to figure which came out first. I don't know if Skyhammer came out first or the Monster Bots came out or the. You know,
it was the same year.
I think it was about the same. So you had those first, and then after
I want to
that...
say, Monstructor came out, and they actually had rubber molded pretender shells. Everything else before that was plastic.
Sure,
to a degree, yes.
So I could see that, you know, maybe that was a later thing, because didn't they not have as many rubber pieces on a lot of pretenders? G1?
Well, the plastic that was used on the belts and stuff for a lot
the
of
belts the and the helmets.
Yeah, it was of a more softer PVC that is very similar to that of the Monster Pretender shells themselves. Just it's not as thick. You know what I mean? Because they both have, I don't even know what the term is, they both sweat, which is the best way to put it, which is you'll find some of the Pretender shells I find. When they've been stored in moist places and stuff, they start to get a goo on them. And that's not just the Monster Pretenders. They're the ones that are most guilty of it. Mm-hmm. But I've encountered Landmine and a few others where the helmet there's some kind of secretion on them or something.
Well, and then you also get the spots, especially on the belts, any of the belts, they get little spots on them. And
that's something
the Monstructor shells had were horrible for that, where they would get spots.
And apparently, again, I actually learned this from My Little Pony collectors, like G1 My Little Pony collectors. Apparently, they call it pony cancer, which is it's just like oxygen and moisture gets stuck in the plastic and causes the mold from the inside. And that's why they call it pony cancer, because apparently the pony's getting cancer or something. And it's getting a cancer deposit. But yeah, it's something that – I mean, I learned this from a My Little Pony collector, that because I had a whole bunch of carded ones from the 80s. And she was inspecting, oh, it doesn't have pony cancer. And she gave me the whole story. And I'm like, oh, it's starting to make sense now. So, but they suffered from that too. A lot of carded Monster Bots from Monstructor are most guilty of that, and it's the same thing. I learned that through carded My Little Ponies that suffer from the same problem. Apparently moisture would get stuck under the card from being in the factory all those years, and maybe it was really hot that day, who knows, and that moisture stayed in there and it stayed inside the plastic all those years and then causes mold rot over all those years, which is, you know, it's found in wood. So it's not surprising that it'd be found in low-quality PVC plastic or a rubbery kind of PVC I'd have to ask a metallurgist who would know this or something. But either way, And not to mention, I just remember now because I was looking at my Lyokaiser and I forgot about Killbison.
Yeah, also had. Lyokaiser, yes. You know, another 1.5. It's not G2, it's 1.5.
What?
A lot of people want to call it Generation 2. It's not. It just isn't. There's no G2 logos on it.
I would
put Lyokaiser. I'm talking about Rescue Force.
Right. But I was sitting here thinking, like, you know, Lyokaiser to me would be G1.
Of course it is.
And then, the laser rods and everything, that's where I kick into the 1.5, because they really didn't go under the G2 banner. And so that's kind of like, that was like a transition. That's
how can that be when they had the G2 insignias?
It's G2. I wouldn't call
that. That's the only argument I got with that.
I know it is, but I just, because I look at G2 and what it is and how gaudy the colors were and everything. And these just don't fit, you know, the, what were the other ones? They
I don't know. Jolt was pretty gaudy.
Well, what are the cars? The
are you talking about the GoBots? The
Jolt, no, Bolt, Sizzle, and Electro.
Yeah, but
all the GoBots are gaudy as hell.
But were they G1 or G2?
That's G2. It's G2 GoBots.
Okay.
I mean, Soundwave was he could land a plane, you know, even though he wasn't one.
So if you had something that was Machine Wars.
I feel that anything, well, Machine Wars is something under that banner, Machine Wars.
Night Sword, yes, that's what I was trying to remember.
When you're talking 93 to 95 of Transformers, with the exception of the Legends stuff that was going on in the UK, that kind of came out around that same time, which I could attribute, we could call them the early prototypes of what would be G1 reissues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of the first version of that before Takara started doing them into the late 90s. But with the exception of that, I think everything falls under that G2 banner, you know, from 93 to 95 before Beast Wars rolls out. You know, even, yeah. I mean, you would look at G2 merchandising that wouldn't have really G2 written on it, but it would have the same font of G2. G2 had a different font for the Transformers logo than it did then. But yet it would have, like, let's say a G1 Ultra Magnus looking watch, you know. Now Ultra Magnus never had a G2 toy, never had any kind of indication of that, but yet here's a G1 looking Ultra Magnus watch and a G1 Ultra Magnus Tiger Electronics G2 game, which is rare as hell. I've been trying to track that down for years. It's by any indications, if you would have found that loose, you would think it's G1 related, but it's under the G2 banner in that same time frame in that same year.
Well, what about the European stuff?
I always thought it was weird that like the European stuff, like take all your Aqua dudes, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at the first release ones that were not these, not the Stormtroopers, but the ones before those that actually got ported to the United States as G2 in a different complete color, if you look at the card backs on those looked G1 card back.
Mm. Well, and not to mention,
I really don't consider those G2.
But yeah, but that's where the confusion comes through, and that's what I'm saying. They don't really fit in G1, and they don't really fit in G2.
I like this in between thing that went on. I like the bits and pieces that got released for Rescue Force that had no G2 logos on them whatsoever.
Right,
and they're not G2. They were basically a recolor of a G1 mold, and they didn't even complete Lyokaiser. They only did 4, which kind of sucks. I mean, I'm sorry, it does. But
makes legs.
Not saying it's an inferior type, but the thing is, they even changed the weaponry on the things too.
Yeah,
right.
Well, they had two variants with that also.
Yeah, there's color variants. So like the drill one has silver or black guns.
All of them. They all have that same kind of thing.
Silver, black, and red.
Silver, red. But the thing that gets me going is it. I know this is, we're getting off topic on this, just real quick. It always made me wonder why they picked those 4. Why they didn't do the other 2, and why they didn't make it a combiner when they had the ability. There has to be reasons. The same aspect that they did the European Constructicons and didn't give them any combining bits.
I think, honestly, maybe it had more so to do with budget at the time. It was 92, which was a transitional period for Transformers because, again, G1 ended in 91 in America. G2 would start in 93. So 92 was kind of this year where Japan kind of got stuff, UK got stuff, Canada got stuff, which was just the UK stuff, but the States didn't. So I think that because the smaller regions at the time were the ones getting stuff, they probably, now mind you, Japan had its own thing going on with Operation Combination and everything. Right. But at least in the case of the UK, they're probably like, well, this is a smaller market for us. Maybe we'll just pick and choose stuff here and there. I mean, it's the same way how, like, again, like you said, the Constructicons didn't have the combiner pieces, but they just had the straight up figures and their right. weapons to a minor degree. Mm-hmm. They were individual carded.
And some color differences too.
Yeah, I was about to say, I believe in variant.
There are gray bits on some of them.
Yeah.
And this is okay. Talk about false advertising. The G2 commercial they have for Devastator is the UK one combined. Watch it because you see the gray bits all over.
Maybe,
it.
You never know. Maybe they had just the pieces there, but it's the same thing where you know, I'm just looking over here and I'm just trying to make sense of that year, because I always sort everything by years, and it's just, that was just a weird year. Because that was the Operation Combination / Skyquake Thunderclash kind of thing going on in the UK. So, I mean, and to me, that's a transitional period, because that's, to me, that is still G1. That's still G1, that stuff. Yeah. That's not G2, because G2, to me, 93 to 95 is G2. Whatever came out.
And that's why I sold those off. There's a lot of people like, why did you sell off all your Pretenders and stuff? Because they're not actually G2. Yeah. They weren't. They just weren't. Even in the comic books, I've read the UK comics that were predecessors to the G2 comics we got over here. And there are two issues that pretty much did not come out. Mm-hmm. And unless you actually read them, they literally are copies of the toys that were on the shelves in the States.
Yeah.
It was funny because nobody was like, well, where did all these come from? You know, these aren't in the actual comic books until way later. And it's like, these things were actually there. You had Grimlock that was blue in the UK comic, red Slag and a green Snarl. You also had Bludgeon.
Is it just a carryover fictional? Well, but he's a carryover fictionally. It's the same way how like the G2 comic books by Marvel carried a lot of G1 characters as carryovers. I mean, the likes of Nightbeat dying in it and stuff like that. But that was just more from a fictional standpoint, less from a product standpoint, where they're like, well, we're only going to feature G2 product. I mean, you know, you would have like stuff that wasn't explained, like, you know, getting a black sideswipe, even though uh-huh. they didn't explain why the body transition happened where, but at the same time, here's, you know, Nightbeat that never got a body swap or anything like that manner. Or even if you want to be really like picky, I mean, there's an Ironhide from the UK in the late end of G2. And I mean, Ironhide never made an appearance in that form as a carryover. Neither did a lot of the G2, GoBot stuff that never made an appearance in the comics, obviously because the comic kind of tanked.
Actually, yes, it did. There's only one frame of it, and that's at the very beginning of the UK comics.
Oh, maybe.
You see Bumblebee in his GoBot form.
In that interesting
it's that. That's the thing. A lot there's some really, really craziness. If you actually go and look at the set, look at each frame of every one of the comics, it's crazy.
Japan was a lot more. See, that's another way how I use my frame of reference of what G2 is, because Japan always had pack-in fiction with all the G2 stuff there, and everything from the GoBots to which later they would use as the spy changers, the laser rods, Hero Prime, you know, which they called Battle Convoy, you know, all of that kind of laser rod opposite Prime that they called Battle Convoy. And then Hero Prime later with the Hero Megatron, all of that stuff was brought over. And it was interesting because it was brought over literally when Beast Wars was just coming out for us. So like it was paralleling there, where they were getting that as brand new product while we were getting Beast Wars. And even when the cartoon was in its early inceptions too, of the first season. So, but I mean, again, we're kind of getting off topic. Like the topic originally was
talk engineering here. Okay.
Yeah.
Engineering. G1 pretty much kind of set like the bar of what engineering needed to be.
Totally. I agree with that. Where, I mean, mind you, it's engineering from 1977, most of it, that then was, that kind of, I want to say, got more simplistic and degraded as it went more into the Hasbro in-house engineering. I mean, you see the transition of design from, let's say, 86 into 87 with the Headmasters. You look at something like, you know, Chrome Dome, not exactly the sexiest looking toy or articulation or very brick-like, but the flip side of it is you can't break that, you know, that guy, even if you wanted to. You know, you can throw him at a wall, he'll bounce right back.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Jason.
Yes.
Why G1? If you had to definitively say why G1 is better than G2, if you had to give three specific option, you know, points, what would the three points be?
First off, I would say G1 because cartoon series.
Okay.
Comic book series and the large line of toys that came out and how strong that had. But let's put it this way, how much of an influence that has put on everybody that collects Transformers, period.
Okay, so you're basing a lot of what you're saying on the history of it, what you grew up with, what you're used to seeing. I can respect that. What do you think about innovation? You know,
I would say
you're talking about it's the first time we've been exposed to these in the United States, and I think even in Canada. Opposed to Japan. So, you know, this is it. This is what you're used to. So this is something new. It's not your 12-inch G.I. Joe and your Barbies and all this stuff and your army men that we were used to, Hot Wheels. This was something different. So I get with you that. Anything else that you think you want to do to more strengthen your stance?
I would say there were less prototypes for G1 that were not released as there were for G2.
Yeah, but to me that has more to do with what's available, what's actually been shown, because I believe there's a lot more people out there that have stuff that just, know, they're just not going to say.
I'm going to reach for that book.
But you know what I'm talking about, Daniel, you know what I mean.
I'm looking at that book right now.
Just because you haven't seen them doesn't mean they're not out there. Yeah. I think that you can't prove that one. I don't think there's any way you can prove that statement.
Well, this, I mean, honestly, is there a book that literally tells you every G1 prototype that was never released, even stuff that probably neither one of you guys have seen? I'm sure there's stuff out there
that
you guys
haven't either. No matter what's documented, there's still all that stuff that's not documented.
Right.
Think about this.
In G2, there's so many
that
were documented and not being released.
Every single figure that's G1, T2, Beast Wars, regardless, everything, there was a prototype for it. Whether or not it's documented, you can find it, whatever, it's there. They didn't just say, hey, this is what we want, and made it.
Never ends. Right.
What is this book? I need to see this book.
Daniel, the Generations Guide Deluxe Edition.
Yep.
Okay, I don't have that book, that's why.
For every figure, it's not just a one and go. Right? There's many, many steps, many...
It's like Power Master
all the way up until the actual item. So
it's like Power Master Prime.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about in between prototype stages. I'm talking about they made a prototype of this toy, but it never got released. That's what I'm talking about. G2, there were several. There were some that people are still kind of butthurt about, like the Combiners.
I just think
they never got those
because we are in the era. Right now, where a lot of the G2 stuff is come out, it seems like it's more common. There's more of it. But I'd be willing to bet there's just as much G1 stuff. It's just no one's talking about it.
I don't know. I mean, there's several things I've seen. Like, take, for instance, that weird colored Scorponok that came up. And I know you guys probably saw it on TFW 2005 is where I saw the link from that's come up. It's this weird one that's got like a green gun and there's like green horns on him. This thing is basically a prototype of something that I remember seeing in the MicroMaster commercials. A lot of people don't realize that's where the heck that was probably going to come
there's
out.
There's two different Scorponox from those MicroMaster commercials that got beat up in stop motion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know what you're referring to there. But those might be one-offs. You know what I mean? Those are different things that are done for more promotional sake, if anything, and commercials and stuff like that. But I mean, I don't know if that would be an argument for why G1 is better, because there's less stuff that's been not released, but where I think it's quite the opposite. I think G1, because it's a much bigger line that lasted for so much longer, there's tons of stuff. I think every year had something on the cutting room floor that never got released, right up to Action Masters with not getting an RC. You know what I mean?
It's true.
And then, I mean, the big mamma jamma is, hey, where's our Unicron? All three different versions that we never got. You know, the Takara one that was like had an orbiting gimmick, and the Hasbro one that it was supposed to speak, you know, and it's just, I think that if you want to talk about that, I think G1 has a lot more unreleased stuff, which is, to me, it's an appeal, but at the same time could be also an argument of inferiority, I guess, maybe.
Well, it's like take the G2 Cyberjets. These little this is Skyjack, which Skyjack just got a release in the new RID series, which I'm glad to see that name come back. But these guys actually had different bits, because Rick Alvarez actually showed us, and this is a previous podcast we did a long time back, that there were actually going to be add-on parts, and they wouldn't have had the flick fire arm. There was going to be a lot of different add-on parts that actually built guns and such on these. So these guys actually literally had a complete changeover of what they actually were going to be, which is a complete different like toy, kind of like Power Master Prime with a combination with God Genrai, with the God Bomber add-on, because it was complete different changes they did there. I personally think these would have been better if they actually would have released them the way they were going to release them, with all the parts, because it bulked these things out and they didn't look so crazy.
Well,
but stuff like that's what I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, but those little teeny tiny changes like that could have really enhanced this line, but it didn't.
Okay. So, Daniel, give me three reasons why G2 is better.
First reason, number one, relevancy. It's what I wanted to actually kind of bring up originally. When their rival company at the time, Bandai of America, was planning in late 92, early 93, they were planning this big port over of an important brand that's been going on for 23 years in Japan. Bandai of Japan was planning to bring over Power Rangers, or what was called Sentai in Japan, and they were bringing over the Kyo Ranger line. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, at the time, Hasbro, you know, like I said, they know what's coming from the inside. And so when they were like, oh, man, we got to keep up with this. Interesting how their Dinobots were colored in a way to kind of almost confuse the purchaser of a rival Dino line that was going to be coming at the exact same time in that of Power Rangers. And so I find that G2's major thing was, especially in why that first wave was just repaints and remolds and stuff like that, was to get into the market and be relevant against a coming Power Ranger line that was going to be the return of popularity of robots after a large absence in what I like to call the Ninja Turtle era and the anthropomorphic animal era that we went through during much of 1987 up until about 1991 and 92, where then we transitioned to another kind of mutant that took that popularity in X-Men and Spider-Man and stuff like that. But the point being is that the return to form with robots, with Power Rangers and what Bandai was planning in Bandai of America with Saban, they rushed to get G2 out, and you see it with the multicolored Dinobots. You know, they could have went straight up and went with, Dinobots in the original iconic gray, but they went with the multicolored ones too, because Lord knows there was another multicolored Dino team coming from Power Rangers at the same time. So relevancy was the first most important thing about G2, was it kept Transformers relevant at a time when it kind of already bowed out because of Ninja Turtles in 87, 88, and was really quiet for many years. It always was there, but never was making a true impact. I always, you know, I've said in previous podcasts how, you know, Transformers, especially during that time, was doing anything they could to be relevant. MicroMasters with Micro Machines, or Action Masters with the action figure boom of the mutant toys from Toy Biz that was doing the Marvel stuff at the time. You know, they were just trying to do anything just to be relevant. So G2's purpose was to keep them relevant, but at the same time put out some product, you know, that was very little, not much had to worry about in terms of engineering. Retool an Optimus Prime, get rid of the safety issues and the breakage issues and the drop test problems that exist in the original G1 toy. Again, that G2 Prime trailer is a lot more solid. You could drop that 100 times, and it's a much more flexible black plastic. Also, they kind of removed some of the other things on that toy that was just not necessary from a parts standpoint, just for stuff not to get lost, make it cheaper. Added a voice box, which was a gimmick that was becoming more predominant at the time and more popular. Added extra weapons. Again, retooled here and there to make it more, you know, more interesting. Same thing what they did with, you know, Jazz and Sideswipe. You know, they just added a little extra missile launcher, got rid of the more fragile, chromey kind of stuff that wasn't necessary on it, because number one, obviously stuff got broken and they saw that the small little hilts on the chrome ones would break, they would scrape. Not necessary. Even in the case of Jazz, a G2 Jazz uses a better plastic than the original G1 Jazz, so that's brittle. I don't know specifically what the difference in plastic is, but it is a stronger plastic. I don't know what it is exactly. Maybe it's a change of a different kind of PVC to another kind of PVC, but there clearly is a change in plastic. Same thing with, I was just about to mention, Sideswipe. His spoiler was very brittle on the original G1 toy. A lot of G1 Sideswipes in the secondary market have stress marks and or cracks on the spoiler. It's like they used the same kind of plastic this time for that spoiler for the G2 one. And, you know, they put stickers on it this time. Maybe they add a little bit of extra little grab and give on it. So right away, there was the whole point of just, you know, trying to keep relevant, having that engineering from learning from the mistakes of the previous G1 toys that were quite fragile, even up to Action Masters with breaking O-rings a la G.I. Joe style. So that's another thing too. Another thing also, which I always felt was important, was an engineering leap in terms of the characters, which is the invention of the ball joint, which up to that point, I mean, you could look at Action Master Elites and they had universal joints, which were probably the closest we would have ever gotten to like really good articulation, where if you look at, say, Omega Supreme and Turbo Master, they had a very good universal joint system going on, but it was still ratchets. It wasn't ball joints yet. And ball joints were actually born out of that need to have stuff that didn't break, because a ball joint pops out, you pop it back in, it doesn't go under any duress. I mean, yes, obviously a ball joint could get loose, but, you know, they didn't think of the long-term impacts of ball joints. They thought of more of the short-term thing where you could break a toy out of the package. You couldn't break a ball joint out of the package, at least back then. Mm. You know, now you have dried out plastic and fractures in a ball joint and stuff like that. Back then, it's a different story. So the ball joint was birthed out of the protection of the longevity of a toy and stuff not breaking and the problems that persisted with G1. But it also led to great articulation, great posability, and then leading to, you know, also, and from an engineering leap, being able to make legs and arms twist in ways that could be stored better to make better transformations. I mean, there was a huge leap in that with Generation 2 exclusively with that. Now, obviously, there's negatives in G2 when it comes also from an engineering standpoint. There was a lot of simplicity, too, because of the fact that it was more of a budget line in the sense that, you know, didn't have exactly a brand. Yeah, well, I wouldn't really say Megatron. Megatron
simple.
He had a voice box. No, but he had a voice box, though, which was something expensive to be putting in toys of that era. I would think more along the lines of stuff like the GoBots when the line was on its way out. I would think more along the lines of, you know, the fact that they just, again, they would do repaints and stuff in the second wave of G2 stuff. That's when they started then tackling Superion and Bruticus, when they really at that point they didn't need to be repainting stuff, but yet they were still doing that. Where Devastator was wave one, though. Devastator was available in the first wave.
The orange one was a repaint, yeah. Though.
Yes, it was.
But that was a store exclusive.
Yes, it was a KB. It was KB store, and it was also UK.
Okay. But that's just it. So it gets to that kind of standpoint where I feel from an engineering standpoint, G2 was a leap forward that is still prevalent today in our toys, where it's very rare today that we see old engineering concepts from Generation 1 found in our toys today, and a lot more of Generation 2's stuff, because Generation 2 was created at a time where quality of plastic had to be better. Breakage issues, stuff breaking out of the packaging. It was the 90s. The 90s was a boom for action figures. 80s was the beginning of the action figure boom, but the 90s was just so much stuff was coming out. And when stuff comes out, you learn also from the mistakes. When a lot of stuff comes out, that means you could learn from all the mistakes of all this product coming out. Well, sure. You know, if using rubbers or using ball joints or using ratchet joints and stuff like that. And as a result, G2, you know, was able to prosper because of that, and then later on lead into Beast Wars and then continue on. I mean, Beast Wars, even though it's its own separate line, is literally the next evolution of G2's engineering, just with animals.
Absolutely.
You know, and what they learned from that. G2 was the first ever Transformer line to really store weapons, like universally all around, where,
well,
I mean, take
your, technically Machine Wars was.
Well, yeah, I guess. Well,
it's kind of hard because Machine Wars was also exclusive also.
Because the reason why I say that is because the way that I see it, almost every single G2 toy, and it even goes to like the remolds of G1 stuff. You look at G1 Jazz, he can't put his chrome gun on himself in car mode. But yet they made sure they went out of their way with the G2 Jazz that he could hold that gun. Now, granted, G2 Starscream, there is a way to kind of store those fists on him and to put that you know, voice box on the alt mode.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not perfect. But in general, I would have to say, if I had to really put a number, like it would be like 95% of G2 really had a good obsession with storing their weapons in both modes. You know, like making a really good use of that, which then became a gold standard by Beast Wars. Like there was literally nothing that was left behind at that
point.
Right,
but I'm looking at like, you know, you had your, and I'm trying to remember the Machine Wars, and then they had their repaints. But those you could store the weapons with. And even
which
with
the... Which were basically two toys.
Yeah, and even with the European ones... The Aquafine and Hydra
Dread, and
you could incorporate the weapons into the alt mode also. So,
but that's something that
rage
wasn't, and but that
rage.
Wasn't spread across. See again,
sure,
the only
I'm
unfair
just saying, thing. I'm agreeing with you that they took an idea and they're building upon it. And then you're right. And then when they went into the ball joints, and if you look at it. In my opinion, and this is something I wanted to bring up, you had Beast Wars, which were 99% ball joints, and then you went past that, and if you even look at Masterpiece, and a lot of people like Masterpiece, and even third parties, there's incorporated ball joints, and what I mean by that is tolerance levels, which means like they could pop off before they break. And that's across the board now.
But if you think about this, though, G1 brought in the ratchet joint and kind of set the bar for what a ratchet joint actually does and how it works.
Well,
if you look at a lot of
the
new third-party toys, they got ratchet joints. And if you look at the engineering aspect behind the ratchet joint, it's literally pulled from G1.
Larger toys will always have ratchet joints, though, just due to weight.
Correct.
I mean,
any
weaker class will still have it. Yeah.
The die cast from that also.
Yeah.
You know, and a ball joint's not going to work on die cast.
The thing is, especially, like, I always see when it comes from a engineering evolution – You have G2, which kind of brought the ball joint, Beast Wars, which made it a universal thing, and then taking what they learned from Beast Wars and applying it to the Alternators line, which was that first marriage of really trying to do something that was a little more the mix of the two with die cast and still have ball joints, because Alternators had ball joints all over the place, whether you like it or not. I mean, sometimes that kind of made the transformations difficult mm-hmm. for some people, but in general, like that was, I find that that's when they really started applying it to stuff. I mean, you could say Car Robots, but I feel Car Robots, I feel, was like the remnants of the engineering of Beast Wars Neo, which was, it still was just ball joints on a smaller scale, where I found that Alternators was kind of like that next step. Alternators really was that next step that then would then lead to what would be Generations and Classics and all of that stuff. But, and then into what would be Masterpiece with the very first, the very first Masterpiece MP01 Optimus Prime, 20th anniversary Optimus Prime, whatever you wanted to call them back in 2003, you know, but, and then you see it with the Datsuns, you see it with, you know, like, and when you're talking ball joints, I mean, no, look no further than like, let's say even the hand of the Jets for the Masterpieces, like Starscream stuff, they got ball joints for each one of their knuckles and stuff to have the articulation. All of that stems from G2. G2 was the first to bring that to the game, but it was all pretty much birthed out of safety regulations and just, you know, to get the figures to be less breakable. So that's something, another thing G2 is better about than G1. But it, again, it's, you know, it's an unfair comparison because of a different era and G2 being a lot smaller, where G1's a lot larger, and so it's a bigger net to cast for mistakes.
True.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking like gimmick wise, G1 had Masters, you had spring loaded missile launchers, you also had the Power Masters, which would unlock and cause a thing to completely transform a different direction, and like say Dreadwing. And that itself, the G1 Dreadwing, was, to me, that was a really weird combination thing that G1 brought in that G2 didn't do until later on when they did release their version of Dreadwing.
Well, you mentioned Dreadwing. Like, yeah. you have Smokescreen and Dreadwing from G2, which had a unlocking gimmick too. When you put Smokescreen, the smaller jet, in the back, it unlocks the tank mode for the ATB. You know, when you're talking gimmicks, that's the invention of the Rotoforce was introduced in G2, which was a spring-loaded kind of whirly bird gimmick. You had the Aqua Force. You had, I'm just looking over here, you know, you had, you know, with the kind of Hot Wheels thing going on with the GoBots, where they worked on Hot Wheels tracks and they had the free-spinning wheels and the storing weapons for all of them. You had the laser rods, which a lot of fans really loved, you know, like with the light-up gimmicks, which, again, didn't exist in G1 really to have like a light up weapon.
There were light up weapon gimmicks, no, but there were light up gimmicks.
It goes all the way back to unless you count like Shockwave with his hand. In general, you know, like a light up translucent weapon really wasn't present until like, you know, it was a thing with Generation 2.
Well,
Galvatron as well.
Light the color change gimmick with water, you know, that was a G2 thing. You know, like the, yep. Again,
well, you guys didn't even mention Inferno.
In its short period of 3 years.
Water shooters.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys didn't even mention Inferno.
Well, see, you in know, G1 that, you had...
That's a G1 mold, but then they added...
the water spray gimmick.
Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but there's one thing they did to G2 Inferno that they didn't do the G1, and that's they got rid of the spring-loaded firing... hands,
right?
Well, again,
they completely got rid of that. They now, gutted that.
That there's part of me that says that that's because of I honestly think it's 100%. It's because of cost. It was cheaper. No springs, no this, that, and the other. You make it simple. It slides in, and bam. I think it was a cost factor.
Not to mention it's cost, but it goes back to the gutted missing stuff from Jazz and everything like that too. Right. You don't need those missiles anymore. Way. Yeah, Devastator was the same way. There's no more missile anymore to be lost for Inferno. There's all of that stuff that's just – it was product that had to be put out from a rival company that had their own stuff going on at the same time. A lot of people were paying attention when Power Rangers came out. Not a lot of people were paying attention when Transformers came out. But they rushed to get that product out there because Lord knows they had to be out there when someone else was going to get into the robot game and possibly change the game at that point. You have to understand the Sentai brand was a big brand in Japan for 23 years up to that point. So, you know, not 23, I think 13 years up to that point. And it's just for them to like to let that slide on Takara's side and Hasbro's side, they had to do something, you know. Bandai
America.
Also
have you have the cartoon series, though. I mean, for G2, like, honestly, to me, I don't see why they couldn't have followed the comic books for G2 instead of coming up with some CyberCube thing and rehashed the old G1 cartoons.
But that's just it. Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole reason with that was that it was cheaper just to rehash that, and the changes, they just stuck in this little cube, flip it over and change that. You change the bumpers at the beginning and at the end. Boom, you got a whole new cartoon. Didn't cost as much.
Well, Cybernetic Space Cube, I would not be surprised, because the G2 cartoon came after the toys were released. A lot of the G2 commercials, which featured CG, which was the first time that was used for Transformers. Up to that point, Transformer commercials were all original cell animation, right. Literally all the way up until Action Masters with, you know, Who Will Join Me, with right. Michael Bell and Peter Cullen. Then they started doing CG across the board for everything. It's actually where also Gary Chalk got his first voice acting gig, was doing voiceovers for those G2 commercials in Transformers. Right. And
yeah, but this is the thing though.
Yeah.
In terms of voice actors, everybody, even to this day, they still think Peter Cullen is Optimus Prime.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he's most known for.
That's it's like this.
It's what they did.
What do you
the one problem I can't give an argument for G2 because it's all G1 voice actors. So
that's what
unless I mention Gary Chalk being Jetstorm in the G2 commercial or Manta Ray from Rotaforce, you know, like it's not going to be very easy to argue against you on that one.
Well, sure, but ask him about his resume, he's not going to mention that first, now is he?
No.
Well, it's because he can't say he voiced a G2 role because there was no G2 role to voice. Like I said, if you had to really pinpoint and go, what are G2 exclusive voice roles? They all stem from the commercials, and it's Victor Corelli with his with his voiceover stuff, and that's really about it. With the exception of Gary Chalk, and maybe there was probably a few other characters, you know, that got voiced over. But
what was the boy? Because he was actually.
Oh no, but that's season 5 G1. You're talking about Tommy Kennedy.
G2, right?
Nah, it's technically season 5 G1.
Cartoons. The toy commercials where he picked him up and who was that?
I don't know about that. That's kind of stretching.
Yeah, but who was that?
The aerial bots are taking their shots. Yeah, Silver Bolts, Reds, and Combaticons. Change me, rearranged to make the super robot Superion, you know? I don't know.
Have a nice little, rap going on right now. So, I mean, that's good.
The one Metamorph and Dudicus. They all combine to make Superions behind in the big bad battle in Bruticus. Robots in disguise.
See, well, the only thing you're missing is like the scratching of the record, you know?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. That's actually so awesome still to this day.
And it's not just that one. It was like, I think they did it for the Laser Oz. They did it for the Rotaforce. Yeah.
Dude, it was fly at that time. Come on.
Yeah. There you go.
All right.
That's I don't want rap music.
So hip-hop. I really, really hate to end this conversation on 80s rap music. But, or would that be 90s? I guess that'd be 90s rap.
It's 90s.
Okay, 90s rap. Okay. So, So the big thing was G1 versus G2. Let's face it. G2 wouldn't be around unless you had G1. Everything afterwards wouldn't be here unless you had G2. You know, it's a segue into it.
Yep.
Right?
That's true.
We all can agree on that.
True. It's a building block. I completely agree on that.
It's a building
Considering, block. Considering he puts me on a different pedestal, considering I'm like the complete Generation 2 nutcase here.
Hey, the whole idea is debate. You got to be put on the spot.
I, you know, I. And like I said, I mean, I had experience with different toys than most people didn't. I mean, I've had a Grandus. Proto Man actually has my Grandus now. I mean, I've played with toys in G1 that completely blows the minds of most people. And it's like, if you didn't play with that Grandus, you played with Dagbase from Brave series, if you ever had that. If you didn't have that, then you never have touched that mold ever. You know, there are molds out there that G2 gave us that G1 didn't. But G1 also had molds that never trickled into G2, and most people have never even touched, like a Star Saber and such. You know, they're very hard to get a hold of. They're expensive. And most people are like, oh, well, I don't, you know, they take that money and go buy a third-party version or a masterpiece version of Star Saber instead of buying, like, the original.
Well,
so,
I think the big thing that when I had this discussion in mind, and I kind of knew it was going to go this way, I'm still going to say it's a stalemate. It really is, because whether you grew up and your first Prime was a G1 Prime and that's the Prime you remembered, or you grew up in the 90s and you remember your G2 Prime and that's the first Prime you remember, or, as we've said before, you know, your first show was Beast Wars or whatever, and that's your quote-unquote G1, doesn't really matter. The whole idea is that they build upon each other. It built the brand, and it got us to where we are now.
Well, I will say this. Like, my first exposure to Transformers was the 86 movie, and trickle bits of season 3 episodes that were aired in Canada. I did not get to see animation of the Constructicons and stuff like that from season 1 until the G2 episodes. That gave me an opportunity later in life that I didn't get before, because while I loved the 86 movie as a kid, I didn't have access to those Sunbow VHSs. Sure. Those weren't as easily accessible, for at least for me in my local area. And it wasn't until G2 came around that I get another opportunity to enjoy those G1 episodes.
Well,
again, like, key episodes too, you know. Sure. Wolfrid, mm-hmm. Heavy Metal Wars, you know, SOS Dinobots, all of those. Well, because of Generation 2.
But
keeping and Generation 2, that came out almost 10 years after the fact of 80, because it came out 93 to right. 95, but almost 10 years after the fact of those original episodes debuting, a whole new generation of kids who were 10 that watched Generation 1 are now in their 20s, they're out of it, but a whole new generation of 10-year-olds being introduced to Transformers and those key characters because of Generation 2. Granted, they would then go forward into something that wouldn't feature those key characters at all, which is Beast Wars, but at least it gave the foundation for that.
Well, exactly.
I always thought this was crazy.
Well, real quick, the thing that I always that got to me was you had this gap of 10 years, and that's wonderful that you have a new generation. But like you said, you've got a new show that brings in the same characters, that reintegrates them into this. And what people today don't understand is we didn't have YouTube. We didn't have Hulu. We didn't have all these things where these shows were out there. You just had to get them. We didn't have them. You couldn't pay for them. You couldn't find them, period. Either they were on TV or they weren't. So by them being reintroduced was the only way that you could reintroduce this whole concept to a new generation.
Well, especially up to that point, the Sunbow VHSs, the oversized box VHSs of Transformers, only featured season 1 episodes. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get season 2 episodes. Those didn't exist on tape back then. Like, you know, I think it was FHS that was the one that was in charge of distributing them.
FHE,
excuse me. Family Home Entertainment, you're right. You know, they were in charge of distributing those. But that, I think it covered only Ultimate Doom, you know, More to Meets the Eye, Roll for It, Heavy Metal Wars, SOS Dinobots. It was only season 1. So, and only if you had a Blockbuster or a Family Video or something that had those tapes, which, you know, again, you're talking tapes that came out in 84, 85. If it was the 90s at that point, maybe they weren't kicking around anymore.
Right.
So this was sometimes your, and it was quintessential, because what it did was is, we were introduced to these characters in the 80s. We were reintroduced to them and reminded of them again in the 90s, thanks to G2. Not so much right. so of, because of Beast Wars, but Generation 2 really did that. And in the 2000s, again, with the Energon trilogy and with the Unicron trilogy and everything, bringing up those names again and those designs again.
Sure.
I mean, every single one of those came back in some way or shape or form in the Unicron trilogy. So G2 serves a very important placeholder in, I mean, as much as in the 90s, Beast Wars was the one that brought Transformers back into true relevance and popularity and sales charts. It was G2 that kept those names alive, kept those trademarks alive, especially that too. That's a very important thing that people tend to forget. Sure. One of those trademarks were kept alive because of G2 that would have, I mean, that would have been completely absent if G2 didn't exist. We would have gone into Beast Wars without a Megatron trademark. We would have gone into Beast Wars without a, you know, Scorponok trademark, or a lot of those were kept alive.
All of them.
You know,
all of them.
You know, or Dinobots, you know, or Insecticon. Yep. You know, I mean, that's in a lot of ways, I stand by the belief that the GoBots line at the end of G2 was almost existed just to keep those brands, you know, well, those IPs alive.
Right. Exactly. Because of what they acquired and what they've since used.
Yeah.
You know, they've used GoBot names throughout the newer lines.
Hell, they call it
an
individual G2 character GoBots.
Right.
Know, like.
Mm-hmm. But Jason, you were going to say something?
What I was going to say is we were talking about like cost when it comes to G2 figures, right? I just thought it was odd because it's like, okay, they reissued basically G1 Prime with different plastic trailer and all that stuff. If we're going to talk about cost, what about that crazy running change that Ultra Magnus went through where he went from rubber wheels to plastic? They could have easily done the same thing with Prime during G2, but they chose not to.
Well, that's where
you
actually
was that, or was that not a story?
That's
exclusive?
Crazy.
Huh? Well, here's the thing. Here's
no,
the thing.
That's,
wait a minute.
You got the Ultra Magnus that came out, and I remember when I was a kid, I had an Ultra Magnus. Mine had rubber tires, painted face, all that stuff.
Right.
I had a friend of mine that had the same toy, except for his had plastic tires, unpainted face, and stuff. But, and he saw mine, and he flipped out. He's like, I must have gotten like a knockoff or something.
No.
I was like, no, it was a running change.
No, it's because he got his from KB. The Ultra Magnus that was a store exclusive was different than the mass-produced one. Yes or no? That's what I understand.
Well,
Metroplex also.
86 in general, you're talking metal toe hot rod, plastic toe hot rod.
Now, see, those I don't know about, but for Ultra Magnus, I was always told that the one that had the least with the plastic wheels, non-painted face, was actually a store exclusive through KB, and it was cheapened up for that run.
And well, KB always was kind of more the economical direction for a lot of stuff too, so it's a possibility. But
they probably carried
comes
Metroplex the same way then, because Metroplex has the same
running change. But I've never heard KB attached to that.
See, that's what's weird. Like, was Metroplex
would
the same thing?
KB even have space for Metroplex?
I don't know, because, I mean, that's a pretty big toy, too. The only thing
KB
I could think of, and I'm really stretching it out, and I'm gonna say right now, this is just my theory, is that maybe they made that in hopes of a store like KB picking that up because it's cheaper, and it didn't happen. So it was just mass released along with the rubber tire version, and it just came later.
Another thing also I want to play off of what Jason said, like when it comes to cost though, I found that generation one G1 Optimus Prime, and I know this for a fact because a lot of my Mint and Vox stuff still has the price stickers on them from Canada. Generation one Optimus Prime was $49.99 back in 1984 in Canada. In the States, it might have been cheaper, obviously. But in Canada, it was $49.99, where Generation 2 Optimus Prime, which I also have a Mint and Box copy of, was $29.99. Now, considering that Generation 2 Optimus Prime might have had a cheaper plastic, it did have the voice box. It did have other missiles. It did have other stuff. And I know, like, I can see from here, I have a Mint on card, Generation 2 Inferno, and it says $14.99 from Zellers, which is a picture Target in the States.
Right.
$14.99. I have a Mint in Box Inferno Generation 1. He was $29.99. you know, in 84 and 85, which is, I mean, what's ignoring inflation is still more, but if, with inflation, right. It's a whole other ball game on top of that. So now granted stuff was taken away, but I don't think there was so much so taken away that it would justify such a huge cost gap. So Generation 2 toys were also relatively cheaper because, and again, I attribute that more to the fact because when Ninja Turtles came onto the scene, it created this standard where it's like, hey, you can get a $5 toy. And kids will love mm-hmm. it. And that became a standard across the board where I guess Hasbro realized, you know, maybe we could make less profit and, you know, and still, you know, still sell toys and sell product. And so, but I'll say this, Generation toys were cheaper for usually sometimes the exact same figure. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes.
Right. So, I mean, you know, how do I put this? You're going to have those gaps, like I was just reading. Mike Boyle said that I always thought the plastic wheeled Magnus was exclusive to the pack-in with the movie's glow-in-the-dark poster. Was around the time when they were doing the movie. That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. But see, here's the thing, too.
Canada never
got KB Toys. We never had that. That was always a privilege to go to the States. We've had plastic wheel Ultra Magnuses.
Well, then that right there tells me that what I thought was incorrect.
But to play devil's advocate with it, but a lot of times when stuff is a store exclusive in the States, we get it through other means. If something is a Target exclusive in the States, we'll get it through sellers.
Now you have Ross and I can't remember the other one.
Yeah.
But it happens. So is that possible? Yes. I just always remember seeing that. I still remember when I went through KB Toys, I saw all the orange Constructicons.
Devastator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw all those. I remember seeing the big G2 Optimus Prime. And I've got one right here. It actually is a bigger box. And I remember that. And I remember the Ultra Magnus. Now, can I sit here and say that I definitively remember that they were plastic wheels? No, I don't remember that. But I remember seeing it. So I know
I want to touch base here with one thing. When it comes to Generation 1, there's been tons of reissues. Of reissues. With G2, there's only been one.
Oh, no.
And that was Laser Prime.
No, there's been more than that.
What other ones were reissue?
Well, let's put it this way. We'll start with...
I'm not talking mold. I'm talking straight up reissue.
Straight up reissue.
Well, look at the Megatron. Megatron was reissued also as, what's it called? The Beast Wars.
I'm talking straight up.
What's it called? Megastorm.
Oh, you're talking about Megastorm.
Megastorm. So
okay, you're talking Megastorm. You're talking Gigastorm. You're talking about a line that's under another name. I'm talking.
You said the same toy reissue, okay. And I just gave it to you.
No. What I'm saying is
ATB Megatron.
When he was re-released, when this was re-released, it was re-released in a G2 box as Generation 2.
Okay.
Megastorm wasn't released that way. It was a completely different box.
No, it was released in a Beast Wars line.
Yeah, it was released as a Beast Wars toy, not a G2 toy. The colors are different, too. What I'm talking about is
it was also a separate character. It wasn't an acknowledgement of the Generation 2 character.
Correct.
What I'm saying is,
Daniel, I agree with.
Okay. Yeah. You've got, when it comes to, reissues, Hot Rod. Hot Rod's been reissued, God knows how, at least twice. Dan? Probably more than that, right? Yeah. How often do you see these reissued?
I'm staring at the collection right now.
What I'm saying is laser rods. Would you ever see a laser rod reissue?
No.
Will you ever see a G2 Starscream reissue?
Well, you know what happens? Wait, let's put it this way in this case. What happens with Generation 1 is those characters get reissued as those toys and those molds. What happens with Generation 2 is those molds get used as future characters. All of those cyber jets, all of those the flip changers, which were G2 molds. ATB Megatron, also known as Dreadwind and Smokescreen, ended up in Beast Wars 2nd as Starscream and BB. You know what I mean?
Instead of being G2 like he should have been.
Well, yeah. Well, that's just it. Instead of the G2. As Brett said before, with Megastorm from the Generation 2, going into even the Hero Optimus Prime. Hero Optimus Prime and Hero Megatron were repainted and re-released in the Robots in Disguise line as Bludgeon and, well, Black Convoy Scourge, you know?
Right,
A lot of those G2 molds still, and you know what the crazy thing is? Still to this day, once in a while, they'll throw one out at us because its engineering, its safety stuff still conform to today's standards.
Correct. We never got it.
We had Universe 1.0 toys. We had BotCon toys in 2005 and 2006 that were still G2 molds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As of 2005, I remember they were using Wind Shear from the Cyber Jets, which was a Universe 1.0 repaint, which was done in blue and
these guys. Yeah. Wind Shear. He looked like Hooligan, pretty much.
I'm trying to look at I'm looking at a lot of this stuff, but the thing and the funny thing is though, as much as that's the case where you're saying, well, okay, there's never been straight up repaints of Generation 2.
Like Teradive.
That's another one. There's never been straight up reissues of G2 toys, but I will give you this, there's been homages to G2 stuff across the board. I mean, as recently as the Combiner Wars line, and then going straight back look, we had a Generations toy that was specifically made to make a nod to the G2 Laserod Optimus Prime, and we constantly, up to this point, always get some kind of nod to, whenever we get a Sideswipe mold, there's always that consideration that there's going to be a black G2 repaint. Whenever we get a Dinobot, there's always that consideration. Well, maybe we'll do a red repaint or a blue repaint. Whenever we get a Megatron, the inevitable green tank one is going to come.
Wait a minute, real quick.
Okay, well, okay.
Whoa.
I wanted to say one thing, Brett.
All right,
when it comes to the reissues of G1, you have to admit this. It has actually affected the vintage department because a lot of people.
Of course.
Oh, they get this? They get parts. Or they're able to get a hold of that toy again.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, but all that
you go in. No, 100% now step to G2. Issue. Well, what I was about to say is step to G2. What do you think is going to happen to the price of this guy in years to come compared to G1?
It's going to skyrocket. I can tell you right now.
I don't know. Carded ones still go for modest value.
They do.
Well, they do.
I'm telling you Wait a minute. The laser rods, I can tell you right now, the swords have gone up in value. They have. Just because they're harder and harder to find. So I agree with you on that. But 100% cut that. All right. So my question is, on the final thoughts, and I was thinking about this. G2 and G1. And I'm going to ask each of you, I'm going to tell you something based upon what I say is I want your opinion on. I've been looking at the newer release lines, and they would do and just like Daniel said, they're always talking about when you release something, hey, they're going to reissue it this way, and this way, so they can get the maximum use of that mold. I understand that. But in my opinion, and I could be wrong, but recently, when they have released something and they've released it again in G2, the G2 seems to be more valuable, more wanted than the G1. What's your opinion on that? And I'll start with Daniel.
I think it's more so because usually the let's give an example, the Combiner War stuff, because it's a big box set.
That's part of it. Yes.
It's more of a collector market thing. Selling the individual limbs and stuff like that. I mean, granted, yes, Japan had a different way that they did Combiner Wars with the Unite. Right. But, I mean, all of the G2 stuff up to this point in general, has been more of a collector market kind of thing. If we got a G2 throwback, it was probably a collector club exclusive or a BotCon exclusive of some kind. I mean, I remember when everyone got very angry at BotCon 2010 when the collector club custom class figure was a G2 Sideswipe.
Yes.
You know, and everyone was very unhappy with that. They're saying, oh, well, that's never going to get a mainstream release. But you know what? You got to give credit to G2 when the Masterpiece line can have a G2 Sideswipe. You know, a collector market toy that is straight up gushing G2. It's not just even a shallow repaint. They took the time to retool it. They took the time to give new weapons, new face. I mean, there's clearly a market for that. And even almost kind of like showing that a toy that was only exclusively released in Japan, based on a comic book they never got. You know, they never got those G2 comics from Marvel. Right. Maybe Scanalations online today, but not the case otherwise. And yet here we go with a Sideswipe of Masterpiece. You know, the collector market of G2 has grown exponentially. And especially I find that when you're like, again, I'm just staring at the broad spectrum of so many toys that we've gotten throughout generations and now with Combiner Wars and Titan Masters and stuff. And there always seems to be an attempt to always do something with a G2 color scheme. Maybe because it's so drastically different from what a Generation 1 color scheme would be of the same design, so it works hand in hand. But it just seems like it's very prevalent. And it's interesting.
Jason?
As far as I'm concerned, when it comes to this repaints and such, I think it's a great idea that they jumped on board whenever they decided to do that Combiner Wars version of G2 Minuscule that was never released. But I also see it as a shortfall because they never even attempted to do Defensor in G2 colors. A lot of people out there, well, they did a custom class with a sticker sheet of one of the figures, and that was it. Whenever they could have clearly released an entire box set and people would have bought it. Everybody would have bought it if they're after the G2 stuff.
I think they would have bought it if maybe the sales of those individual box sets were better. I think
once those box sets ended up hitting Ross and such out here, those things went flying off.
Your argument should never be the discount market.
I agree with you there.
I hate to say it. You look at how many Transformers been released throughout the years that end up having to hit clearance sales before people bought them. Once they bought them all, where does market come from? It's like the cult classic thing. Well, you know, people don't jump on board with this thing until all of a sudden it becomes affordable and everybody jumps on it. Oh my God, there is actual money in this, and they jump right back in it again.
But here's the thing. And Daniel, I'm alluding to what you were saying, and just listen to me first. But when you have the idea, and you say it's a good idea, I mean, look how well it did in the open market. That's one thing. When you say, look how well it did on the, I guess you would call it not secondary, but the discount market.
Yep.
It didn't do well in the open market. So maybe that wasn't such a good idea. So that's why some of that stuff doesn't work. We are our worst enemy as collectors. We ask for certain items, and then when we get it, we don't buy it. It goes to discount, and oh, everyone loves it. We look at it as a win, but the Hasbro, Takaro, and it's a loss because it didn't sell on the first primary market. So
that's where I said, like with Menasor, if they would have released a Defensor to go with that Menasor, most people would have bought it, even if it was that. Because everybody's like, okay,
I'm
going
to say,
let's say this right now. You say most people would have bought it. Here's the thing: when G2 Superion came out, did most people buy it?
Quite a few did.
But not enough. When G2 Menasor came out, did most people buy it? Now those are the
two. A lot of people did because of the fact that it was something. Well, it basically harshed to something that never.
If most people bought it, then that would have justified to continue this trend.
Well, there was a couple things, if I remember correctly. I thought that it came out late. It wasn't around Christmas time. There was a couple things with that.
It also released very, very, very shortly right after Superion. That was the other problem. It didn't wait.
No, but
they released it too close.
Still, I still believe what Daniel's saying is true. Overall, niche items like that don't tend to sell well on the first primary market. And if you're saying, hey, it does well on the reduced market, that's not what they're looking for. I mean, otherwise they put it out for that price point to begin with. I mean, it just it just doesn't work that way. And if nothing else, we definitely, as a collector, are our own worst enemy. We, like I said, you know, we bitched and bitched and bitched. I mean, look at the first release of Masterpiece Primes. And I love this. Look at the first release Masterpiece Primes, and we bought it up. We bought every freaking one of them they did. If they did a Toys R Us exclusive, we bought it up. Battle Damaged, we bought it up. Animated, we bought it up. And I'm talking about the MP1. Bought them up. Gone. MP10 comes out. Holy crap. Well, I don't want this. I don't want that. Throw it away. Throw it away. I want this MP10. And they sold out. They sold out. Gone. Yep. So what'd they do? They made a second release. And guess what? We bought them up. We bought them up. They sold out. They sold out. So then they went with, I think it was Big Bad Toys.
Here they go.
And they had their own, which came with a little whatever. It doesn't matter. The point being is if it's
with the Vector Sigma you're talking about?
Yes. My point being is if we want it, we're going to buy it up. We're going to buy it up. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to puke out more. If it goes
they're
to the secondary market, we don't want that. We're not gonna make any more of it.
But look at G2 Sideswipe. He sold tremendously well. There was a lot of people out there really liked that one.
I liked it, but I don't see numbers.
I don't think
as far as I've. As far as I've seen, quite a few people absolutely love that G2 Sideswipe.
It doesn't matter.
And some people were upset that we didn't get a G2 Prime. Because all they literally really had to do is redo the colors slightly and slap some stickers on it, and it would have been sold. Because you got people out there that literally collect nothing but Prime. Now, they would have bought it.
Well, that's the Bape line.
Yeah, but you just, or the Bape line, you just said the problem with that statement. It was easy to make. But they didn't do it. Why didn't they do it? They felt not enough people wanted it. It's as simple as that. Not enough people bought
Well,
the
think
G2.
About how many times I
Not enough people bought the G2 Sideswipe for them to
G2 think, Bumblebee. G2 Bumblebee that went on crazy clearance in Japan.
Exactly. They tried it, but and then
low as $30.
You know, maybe Prime was next, but you know, the market wasn't there. It's just It's the way it is.
Well, there was a lot of people that I know that really wish they would have recolored Grimlock when he came out in blue.
Think about the cost factor on that. You could do
there's,
all
there's
of
stuff
them.
That I want, but it doesn't mean it's good for business. You know what I mean? Like, I would love, like, I mean, I love
Road King
for Master Force. But doesn't mean that, like, oh, I need a Masterpiece Road King from Master Force.
Look, wait a minute. On a lesser degree, my wife loves purple. Okay? And she loves, let's just say, I'll pick a character at random. Chrome Dome. He's right here. So why not make a purple Chrome Dome? My wife loves it because not everyone likes that. That's what Daniel said.
It almost would be the master RC.
You got to look at bigger than what I want. It's what, you know, it's a toy company. They want it. They're talking about numbers. It just doesn't add up. The G2 stuff doesn't add up.
But we're okay. Look at online exclusive stuff that happens all the time. BBTS. I.e. this numbers. Gigantic gift set
go
that's
ahead.
Coming out pretty soon.
Sure, go ahead.
How many people are going to be buying this thing? This isn't going to be sitting on Toys R Us shelves. This is a different one. It's from BBTS only.
Why do you think it's there?
So
not
why made? Couldn't they – well, hang on. Why couldn't they have made some of those masterpiece recolors exclusive for online purchase only. Because, same thing with the, when they did with Unicron.
Because you said it yourself.
Promise years back.
You said it yourself. Why wouldn't they make it mass release? You said it yourself. Because they don't think they'll sell that many.
So they right. Mass, you have so to understand you don't have to do mass release. You can do online exclusive.
No, no, but you have to understand something. Like how it works is when something is mass release, it's with the intention that they agree, here's a product that appeals to a wide audience. And if it appeals to a wide audience, it makes a wide amount of money and profit. You could ship more product. You could ship more cases. When you do something that is a niche market and you recognize it as a niche market, that's why the best example, 90% of BotCon's choices. BotCon's choices, with the exception of the 2007 line with the Games of Deception, most of those were stuff that in all honesty would have only really appealed to a minuscule market. Granted, there's exceptions in every year in general. You know, you could say, well, that Scourge would have been good in 2009 for mainstream before we got our Generations one. But in general, like, look at the entire Shattered Glass line. You know, yes, it goes for big money in the secondary market with the collectors, but would have something like that done well in the mainstream market? That being said... Well, it's awesome, but how many Black Rodimus Primes, both in Japan and in America, have we gotten on shelves? Zero. We've gotten e-hobby Black Rodimus Primes in Japan. We've gotten, you know, exclusives from BotCon and stuff, from whether if you want to call Sideswipe a Black Rodimus Prime repaint from Animated, but even with the case of Shattered Glass Rodimus, when you got the Wild Rider, which was a Gente exclusive, you know, Black, even that kind of niche stuff was all relegated to an exclusive nature. If it was something that they firmly believed deep down was something of a huge profitable manner, then it would be out there. Why haven't we gotten a full, like, you know, we've gotten trickled to us over and over and over Beast Wars stuff, but why haven't we ever gotten a mainstream Beast Wars line outside of an store exclusive or some kind of 10th anniversary small subline that was only available for a small period of time, or we got a small little PVC here and there, or a Creo that says his name is Cheetor. You know, it's stuff that they always look at the grand spectrum and go, here's what's going to sell in the mainstream, and I'm going to go with those characters because those will be able to do well, while we still want to give stuff to the fans. We still want to say, hey, remember Lyo Kaiser? But we're going to do a niche, expensive box set. We're not going to do Lyo Kaiser as individual limbs. We're not going to give you just Yelbat or Hellbat or whatever IP name it was as an individual limb taking space on a Toys R Us shelf when people are going to go, who the hell is that?
No, because they can sell 20 renditions of Prime and Bumblebee. Because that's what they do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Prime, Bumblebee, Starscream always gets like their thing. But this is what kills me is the fact that, okay, we had that Platinum re-release of the ginormous Starscream, and how much of a shelf warmer was that thing?
Granted,
and that was a right decision.
Are you talking about the Cybertron one?
You're not talking
about that gigantic thing.
That was Cybertron, which already sales were really going down at that point. You know, that's just before the kick in the butt from the movie continuity. So. And toy sales, but you know, I think a lot of stuff was kind of. I mean, you could argue the same thing. How did Cybertron Menasor do, or Cybertron Metroplex,
if you're talking about big figures, look at what was it, Beast Machines, Nightscream, Cheetor.
Nightscream. Oh, that one too. Yeah.
Or Cheetor. You're like, what? Bigger. You know,
are we still collecting Cheetors for Dawn?
Yes, we are. Please bring them in. I will send them to him. And we actually, it doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll get back. Bigger does not always mean better. Nostalgia does not always mean better. As much as I pride myself on loving nostalgia, and I think that all my collection is based on that, it's, you know, the collector market, according to Hasbro, is like 10%. Maybe 20% at tops. So they're looking at how many Cheetors, how many Bumblebees, how many Optimus Primals, how many Optimus Primes can I sell to the kids in as little space as possible on your Toys R Us shelves?
And you know what, too? And the funny thing is that they test us every so often because, like, granted, was that Generations Universe 2.0 Cheetor a bad toy? Of course it was. But the point is they put one out there. It didn't do well, regardless of, oh, was it a good toy or not? But it didn't do well. So they go, I don't think we're going to be putting out a lot of that character in the future. It wasn't received well. There's been terrible Bumblebee toys, but they probably sold well because of, you know, just the character recognition.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, but if we're going to touch base on, like, characters being sold, Trypticon. The only people that really are going to relate to that are people our age, maybe a little younger. But little kids aren't going to know what Trypticon is.
Yeah, all but is a there's big, a reason why we're getting dinosaur. Trypticon as a collector market oversized toy and not the – every other time we got Trypticon – he was a repaint. He was a Scourge repaint from Cybertron, was a miniature Scourge repaint from Legends. Like, but the only time he ever used it was a safe direction. Yeah, it was never.
Why do you think he'll be so successful this time? I have
success is subjectable because, in all honesty, was Metroplex successful?
He sold out every time.
He did I don't know. Whenever he shows up at Costco, I always wonder sometimes.
I never saw him at a Costco.
Oh, many times.
Okay, I never saw him at a discount, but go ahead.
This is the thing. Most people that needed a Trypticon bought that Platinum reissue. So you're going to have that market of people that are like, no, I don't really want this new Trypticon, but you got the people that are literally, I'm finishing my masterpiece shelf. And they're going to be like, okay, I'm going to get it. Or they're really, really, really into this Titan Returns line. And they want that Trypticon to go with that Metroplex next to that Fort Max. I understand some people never got hold of one. It's a cool toy. I'm not saying Trypticon sucks. I think it's awesome. But the niche market we're talking about, primarily are going to be collectors that are going to buy that Trypticon.
Well, yes and no. But here's the difference, and I'm going to leave it with these two options, and then we're going to close because we've been going too long, and hell, my computer could shut down any minute. you have all these extra little gadgets that it does, which I think are super freaking cool. It's a dinosaur. You're going to have people that just love dinosaurs. I mean, there's another market right there. So I think it's going to do well. Based on those, I really do.
I don't know.
Platinum just
didn't
do it as well as this one. This one just, and I am totally against all this new stuff. I mean, I've tried it. I don't like it, but this one, I like. I really do.
This is my thing, though. You're talking about dinosaurs, right?
I am.
Our last movie line was based on dinosaurs, and how much of that crap sat on shelves? Months after months.
I don't know. The dinosaurs are coming back.
Think about what's going on right now.
They're coming back.
But
a very, very
King Kong.
Guys,
I mean,
movie lines this big for a reason now.
Dinosaurs are coming back. We got a Power Ranger movie with dinosaurs. We got a Godzilla movie with dinosaurs.
It's a big theme. Let's put you this way. I would say, and I have absolutely nothing to do with it, but I would say that if a certain big robot convention was around, that they might theme it towards dinosaurs just because they're kind of big right now.
Yeah. I'm not against dinosaurs. All I'm just saying is, like, looking at the base market, the way dinosaurs sold during the Age of Extinction, there was a lot of stuff that literally sat on the shelves and never got
made. I think Age of Extinction was a little more than just the dinosaurs.
Yeah, that movie sucked. That's what it was.
The movie sucked, but the toys that they released for that were.
Well,
now Trypticon's awesome. I don't care. You could have painted that thing any color in the world, and it's still.
All I'm
going
to say is that if you ever wanted to see a new G2 colored Grimlock, it's going to be this year. I think that's what's going to happen. An official G2 colored Grimlock, because it's cheaper. They already got the mold. And right now, I think dinosaurs and everything are on the uprise. And I think if it's going to happen, it'll happen now.
Power Ranger movie is just coming out right now. It's awesome.
I would love to see more than just Grimlock made in an official capacity. And I think this year will be the year, if any. Unless it's one of those ones that they've got it planned and it's not, you know, got kicked back or whatever. But in any case. All right. So there you go. We've done G1. We've done G2. We have...
slap the movie line in the face.
Have we really decided who's better or the big debate? I think we're all in agreement that they kind of need each other to keep it going the way it did.
I think every Transformer line has served some kind of purpose.
No matter
even
how
sublines.
Bad it is.
Even like a Machine Wars had its purpose. A Creo had its purpose.
Well,
I mean,
how many times do we talk about how, I mean, there's people that do not like the movies.
Oh, well, God. Well, they of course serve a purpose.
But they serve a purpose because of the popularity and bringing more people in. Of course, we've talked about this. So, yes. G1, G2, yes, they are their own separate entities. They are their own personal evils. even though one's completely gaudy. I'm not going to say which.
Just very 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, that's 90s.
Just think about what you'd be wearing in 1993. It probably would match that.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Picture Will Smith circa 1993 Fresh Prince. Colors are about right.
So you got your
On Generation 2 is so 1993.
So you got Fresh Fresh Prince Transformers. But in any case, I hope that we've enlightened some people to the history. And at least my big goal on this was is those that were totally against one or the other have an open mind on why and maybe have a better appreciation. That would be wonderful. So, but I think we're done. Any closing thoughts, Jason?
I say, guys, go out there and collect whatever you love. If
like
you
that.
Are collecting just to collect, that's great. But if you're collecting in overabundance and you don't know why you're collecting it, you might want to stop and weed your line down a little bit. I myself found myself having to do the same thing. And thanks to Dan up here, if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have had any Transformers left because I was selling everything. And I stuck with G2 because I love it. So it doesn't matter what cork it is. If you're an Energon lover and you love Energon, collect it and stick with it.
No matter how bad it is, stick with it.
Exactly. That's how I see it.
That'll be a cheap route.
Well, it is. And if you love the Unicron series and that's what you want, that's your G1.
It's okay.
Get
I collect really bad toy lines outside of Transformers anyways.
Yes, so. You do.
Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
Yes. All right, Daniel, final thoughts?
Final thoughts? You know what? Like I said before, every Transformer line has always had its purpose. I mean, what Brett did today is he kind of flipped it where the G2 lover had to praise G1 while the G1 – well, I wouldn't call myself a G1 lover. If I had to lean to one series, it would probably be my boys in Beast Wars. But, you know, but I was – G1 was my first taste of Transformers. But I feel that – every Transformer series has its good and its bad. Every single one. I don't think any Transformer series is flawless.
Right.
I mean, I think even Beast Wars, which is my favorite series, I think its weakness is that it just doesn't have the iconic designs that Generation 1 has. And that's, I think, its biggest weakness in the sense that people like cars more than they like cheetahs, you know? Because, you know, you could just go to the zoo. You know, I don't know. But I just feel that... everything that we've ever had with Transformers has something to offer. Even Kiss Play. You know what I mean? Everything that we've ever had of Transformers has something to offer of a positive. And while we did do a grand debate today, I think ultimately in the end is if anything, we fleshed out what truly was maybe the hidden gems that existed in each property at its time.
Right, right. Exactly. So with all that being said, whether you're like G1, G2, whatever. We've talked about this before. Whatever your G1 is, that's great. That's awesome. I really want people to get from this is to appreciate the whole history of where the line that we love came from and where it's going, because that's the only way it can continue. It really is. You know, you talked about those that don't look at the past are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. So there have been dark times, you know, Energon, and there have been good times, but, you know, we don't want to repeat those. So, but in any case, I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've learned something. I hope that more than anything that you've been entertained with this. If you guys have any ideas that you want to send to us, please do. If you, as always, you know, jump into the conversation while we're live, we'll listen to you and we'll answer your comments and see what we can do about that. So with all that being said, I'm going to wrap this one up because we've actually gone almost an hour and my computer hasn't crashed. So I'm going to chalk this up to a win on this. Yes.
It's a win. It's a win.
So
we'll have better production in future weeks. This was a special one today.
Yeah. If I could ever get this damn thing to work right, this would be wonderful. I love it.
This was the G2 of the show.
Exactly.
Come on, man. Lay off the GPS. You know it started in G1.
Now, this was the 1.5 because we had a half hour, and now we have an hour. So it's a 1.5 show. With that being said, I am Megamus, your host, and with me is Plasticon.
Yeah, you guys can go check out my YouTube at Plasticon1978. I got tons of videos on there, things doing with G2. I also reviewed the entire Machine Wars line, too. You can go check all that stuff out. Proto Man here, he's got some awesome stuff, too.
All right.
I do this and that. Be sure to see us in the future.
Absolutely. So, I'm Megamus with TFYLP. Please check out our Patreon page. And check us out on Facebook also. You can also check this out anytime you want. I think we're on just about every venue you could think of. We've been pipping ourselves out pretty good, as well as we can. So check us out next time. And take care.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.